10. Enclosures. There had been one more thing. In those weeks when Jun had sent carefully worded texts and waited and hadn't looked at her messages and then caved and tried to internet stalk Martha Einkorn and failed because, honestly, if you work for the guy who basically invented social media, then you're pretty good at not being social media stalked. In those heady and fevered days, Lai Chen received a message from a video essay maker she had a few mutuals with, the fascinatingly disaffected Badger Bywater. At 21, Badger was Ellen Bywater's youngest child. Their siblings had come of age before their mother was in control of Medlar, had gone to Harvard, Yale, and Oxford, in one case all three, and had become, respectively, a consultant neurologist, the Asia-Pacific director of a pharmaceuticals company, and the chair of an international bank. Badger looked upon their lives and said, "I'm not into success as a metric." Badger refused to take money from their mother and funded their life by creating electronic files of miniature personalized sculptures that could be 3D printed at home. Badger's most popular shtick was to sculpt you, your partner, or your friend as a zombie. Badger's waiting list for zombie art was more than 2 years long, and while Badger's siblings snarled that they only got those commissions because of their famous mom, Badger said, "Fuck you! You think your life would have gone the way it has without mom?" Lai Chun was in New Zealand in March, about to run a 3-day in-person workshop on disaster preparedness, when the message came through. "Hey," it said, "I'm Badger. I think your stuff is cool. I'm in New Zealand too. Want to meet up?" This was, as things went, not that unusual. All sorts of crazy people turned out to be fans of Jun's work. She'd once had a message from a Baldwin brother asking her to help his daughter with her university essay on apocalypse mythology. Not the most famous Baldwin, one of the others. Jun hadn't replied. But Badger was a big deal in their own right, and moreover, felt connected to Martha. Ellen had been one of the group who went into the mountain. There was something here, something just out of reach. She wanted to know what. Jun had seen Badger's stuff. Badger's most famous viral video broke down, in 4 minutes and 40 seconds, what their views were about the giant technology companies that, they agreed, had paid for their expensive education and excellent teeth and whose existence secured their own safety, but would destroy everyone else's. Badger spoke rapidly, their video dense with information and memes. The video was called Enclosures. Badger said, "My mom's great-grandparents were Irish immigrants. They came to the U.S. during the potato famine, which was caused by centuries of oppression by the English. The English aristocracy did a thing called enclosures, taking land everyone used to own in common to graze their cows, sheep, or goats on." A cartoon cow, sheep, and goat appeared, with comical popping noises around Badger's face, and putting a fence around it and saying, "Sucks to be you. This land belongs to me now." An image flashed on the screen of an anime warrior shouting, "All your base are belong to us." Badger said, "The aristocracy justified enclosures in the name of efficiency. Take all those little strips of common land and put them together, and you could farm them with bigger plows and single crops. You could really achieve something, and they did. They made a lot of money, but they were already rich and powerful, and none of that wealth went back to the poor. They took something that used to belong to everyone and found a way to make it theirs." Badger paused and put their face comically close to the screen. They were dressed as Malcolm McDowell in A Clockwork Orange for this moment in the video, their eyelashes a zigzag hieroglyph around a single all-seeing eye. They said, "You see where I'm going with this." Malcolm McDowell morphed into Badger dressed very like their mom, in a cream suit with an uncannily accurate short gray wig. "That's what these social media and big technology companies have done. They found a way to siphon off something that no one used to be able to own. They invented a new kind of fence to make a new kind of enclosure. Ellen Bywater and Lank Sketlish and Zimri Nomic and the rest have taken something that used to belong to each of us, put it together into usable data chunks, and used it to become very, very rich. There never used to be a way to own the contents of everyone's address book, or the list of things you bought at the store, or the words you'd used to talk to your friends, or the data about where you are, or or the pictures you'd drawn and put in a gallery or on your wall. They've taken all that information, scraped the data. They've amalgamated that and made it more efficient, but they haven't used that efficiency to benefit us all. They've used it to enrich themselves and keep the rest of us poor. By this point, Badger was wearing a French 18th-century tricoteuse outfit, sitting next to a gallows. If your data belongs to you, then you ought to decide exactly who uses it and how. You should be able to transfer it from place to place as you want, and access it as you like through any service. The reason they don't let you do these things is not because it's hard. It's because it doesn't make them more money. Translation work, artwork, writing work, that belongs to the people who did it, even if they put it online. And if we are using it for translation software or art-making code, we should be paying them for their work. That list of your friends belongs to you. You should be able to get it and see their updates that they write for free in any way you want, not just through services that monetize anger and show you ads. Badger applied a filter to the video, so they looked like a mouth and eyes speaking in the middle of a forest. And if you're asking yourselves, fine, the data should be used differently, but if that money comes from stuff that belongs to us, shouldn't we have access to it, collectively, as a species? The answer is, yes, my Gaian parts of the divine whole. And here are some things we could do with it. A list flashed across the screen. Badger's subscribers had to pause the video to see the full list of dozens of recommendations. Jun only read a small selection of them. Break up Anvil and use their infrastructure too. Subsidize at cost simple vegan meals to be produced using supermarket-rejected fruit and veggies and distributed using their existing networks. Insulate every home in the world. Organize a volunteer army just like we did for vaccinations and get it done. Every single one of those tech companies has expertise in huge international projects like this. Enable sharing of consumer goods. If you look for lawnmowers on Anvil, it'll suggest neighbors who have signed up to a lend and share service for their lawnmower. Rationalize deliveries. You, the consumer, only have to accept one delivery a day. Other companies and governments can use Anvil's network for deliveries. Take public ownership of Medlar and invest and work with their amazing designers to create new battery technology. Make sure that every tablet, computer, or other digital product is easily repairable by the end user. Include detailed repair manuals and commit to repairing and upgrading Medlar products rather than just selling new ones. Reuse and recycle every component currently considered disposable in the Medlar ecosystem. Pay for electrified vehicles to replace gas-driven vehicles around the world and make most of them publicly owned and borrowable via an app or a card scheme. Use Fantail's enormous reach to invest in the free education of women, girls, and non-binary people, the simplest and quickest way to reduce inequality and improve the environment. Organize a global paid core to plant 14 billion trees, particularly on degraded land, and to restore tropical forests. Create a globally networked project to replace dirty cook stoves with stoves that run on renewable energy, designed in each region with local cooking styles in mind. Work with every urban center to make the city more walkable with better public transport infrastructure. Fantail has the information on where you go every day. Use it for something worthwhile. Not to mention, use all of their collective mind-boggling wealth to pay rainforested countries to keep the land as rainforest. Pay for developing economies to go straight to renewable energy with no coal-powered phase and invest in research into hydropower, wind power, and solar power. It can always be more efficient and better. Build seawalls to stop the ice caps from sliding into the sea, melting and destroying us all. Repair coral reefs by regrowing coral and creating new ecosystems of oysters and robust plants to outcompete algal blooms. Badger said, I got some of these ideas from Project Drawdown. There are many other ideas. We have no shortage of good projects. There are thousands of people working on these things already, and they are proven and scalable. The reason you feel despairing about this and think it's impossible, now Badger Bywater was wearing a tinfoil hat, is because they want you to think it's impossible. Badger leaned very close to the screen, their mesmerizing eyes clear and focused. Look, You know who I am, and I'm not going to badmouth my mom. Not specifically. But believe me, I know how they think. They believe they can survive a global environmental breakdown. They think they'll inherit the Earth after it's done. They don't want to do the things it'll take to fix this. They don't want us to think about it. And they can direct our attention where they want it to go. But we own that part too, not just the money. We also own the influence, the networks, the infrastructure, the information. If we know enough to keep us buying, we also know enough to get us working together on something. If we do that stuff up there... Badger pulled down an imaginary roller blind, covering their face momentarily with their grid of solutions. We get a better life and a better planet at the end. We can use our own resources to fix our own problems. We can do it quickly and pretty painlessly. We just have to stop letting a few people use what belongs to all of us to make themselves richer and richer. Chun watched this video 7 or 8 times before she got all the fast-moving content. She sent a message to Badger Bywater. Would be great to meet. When and where? Badger Bywater said. Someone I know said you were trustworthy. Are you trustworthy? Someone I know had to be Martha. This was some sort of test or initiation. It was something that brought her closer to Martha anyway. Jin replied. Yeah, I know how to keep a secret. Badger replied. Great, because I'm going to show you one hell of a secret. In person, Badger Bywater was a lot less forbidding than their information-dense online persona. They were wearing denim dungarees, a button-down shirt, and a bucket hat. They seemed younger, sitting at the wheel of an open-top Jeep outside the restaurant they'd both agreed on in Christchurch. Hey, said Badger. Hey, said Jin. So, you want to go in, or... Yeah, said Badger. So, I, suggested meeting here, but the thing I wanted to show you is kind of a distance. 2 hours in the Jeep. I mean, I don't usually Jeep. You don't usually Jeep. I mean, I don't. You don't suggest meeting people at a restaurant and then turn up with your own transport and encourage them to get in like you're going to take them to a distant part of the backwoods and murder them? Wow, that went real dark real quick. Chun shrugged. Survival person. So there's no way you're getting in this Jeep? Are you going to take me to a distant part of the backwoods and murder me? No. Because at least 12 people know I'm meeting you right now, so you won't get away with it. Okay, Badger laughed. I guess I'll have to put that off for another day. Jin pulled herself into the Jeep next to Badger. So, where are we going for my non-murder? You want to see my mother's secret survival bunker? Ellen Bywater owned a hill and 700 acres in rural New Zealand. South Island, far from the trains and the road, purchased from Maori elders using a contract that specified that the land could not be owned in perpetuity, that in 150 years, this contract would need to be renewed, and if the elders wanted the land back, there would be no penalty for non-renewal. Ellen Bywater was contractually obliged to allow access to certain sites and certain pathways to the Maori nations throughout the year, and access to other sites and pathways only at certain times of the year. She had given assurances in the contract that various species would be preserved, that she would put aside funding and go to extraordinary effort to maintain the biodiversity of the region, that only up to 50 designated acres of the land would be used for farming, and that would not be at high intensity or using chemicals whose long-term effects might not be well understood. Inside the hill, Ellen Bywater had burrowed down like a beetle. Dug deep into the earth were 8 stories, down, down into the dark. And there, she had brought light. Fiberglass microfilaments drew daylight down into the central atrium of a structure that, Ellen Bywater told herself, might bring some peace and hope in dark times. The design, of course, was secret. The architects bound by contracts so exacting that, as one of their lawyers pointed out at the time, they were technically forbidden to ever even think of the multi-layered structure buried beneath the hill in Te Waiponamu, forbidden to dwell in their minds on the filigree arrangement of wooden and metal-etched panels in the great hallway, forbidden to remember the graceful curve of the central well, which echoed the bowed beak of the Hawaii bird long extinct now in New Zealand, a nod to the fragility of life on Earth and the irreplaceability of what might be lost in any new cataclysmic event. When the architect's lawyers had raised this point, Ellen Bywater's lawyers had responded, "We think it is better if they try to forget. We acknowledge that it may not be possible to forget, but nonetheless, we would prefer to keep this clause, to assure ourselves that they are aware of their obligation to forget, and therefore the absolute impossibility of acting on any non-forgetting they are unable to avoid." "You are kidding," said Shun. "I'm not," said Badger, as they opened the second set of security gates with a small key fob. "I can probably get you copies of the contract if you can give me time." This was a good offer, more than most sources could produce. That would be incredible. "I just feel like..." Badger put their arms behind their head, giving a glimpse of luxuriant, dark underarm hair. "I've known about this for so long, and I've kept it to myself. And maybe in my own mind, I've been thinking that, yeah, okay, if stuff went really bad, I'd come here. But I don't think anyone should have that kind of out."
"You don't want the golden ticket?" Badger flashed Jun a look.
They took the elevator down and stood in the atrium and gazed upward to the blue and bright glass opening high above them. To Jun's left were the rows of reading rooms with the great books of all world civilizations. Printed books, not electronic, for their beauty as much as their utility. To her right were wall hangings made of natural fibers leading to the community therapy and recreation areas. Below, in concentric circles, were hydroponic gardens and a system to recycle and purify all wastewater to irrigate crops. There was a circular swimming pool and a ring-shaped swimming track around the outside of the fourth level down. It would be naturally replenished by rainwater via an ingenious concealed system.
"It's supposed to house 500 people, said Badger, in the event of world disaster.
How much did this all cost? Badger looked upward, calculating.
"I don't know exactly, but I think like $700 million? Kind of around that."
"Wow. How do you feel if I take some photos?" Badger made a face.
"Do you mind if I send you photos? It's just, the key has a timestamp. If your photos have a timestamp, they'll know it was me. I can send you some photos later if you want, but it'll have to be a few weeks. I think it's kind of more important that you saw it. You understand?"
"Yeah, I get it." Jin had dealt with whistleblowers before. There was a process of building up trust. Often it was important to them to ask her to do something that didn't quite make sense, and see that she did it. Badger Bywater was, potentially, the source of stories that would break through into mainstream news. Jun had the feeling that Badger was testing her, probing her, trying to figure out who she was. So,
"Yeah, I get it. Must feel weird, doing this to your mom."
Badger leaned against a hand-carved table.
"She's been talking about this place more and more since my dad died."
"Aha. She planned it with him, or..." Badger shook their head.
"I once caught her talking about it like it's definitely going to happen. She was saying, like, it'll be so great when we're all in the place in New Zealand. Like it'll be a good spot for a vacation."
The golden ticket, thought Jun. Martha Einkorn and Sela Nomic, Lank Sketlish and Zimri Nomic and Ellen Bywater. They're all getting ready to use the golden ticket. They're feeling guilty about it or fine about it, but they're preparing. Of course. Even the brief romance with Martha made sense like this. The super rich and their entourages were picking their partners for the end of the world dance.
Is something coming? They know that something's coming? They think something is. And if she's talking about the bunker like that, then she's given up on trying to fix anything. She's looking forward to this, to the world being over. At least for almost everyone. She and her friends? They're going to be just fine.